Well, good evening and welcome. This is Big Al's Community Chat. Every second and fourth Wednesday evening, here we are at WEFT 90.1 FM on your radio dial in Champaign, Illinois. And we stream live all globally on WEFT.org. Well, tonight it's just me and you out there and something special. There are some special people I'm going to discuss about in just a few moments here. Because about 7 or 8 years ago, Big Al turned into Papa Al. Papa Al was, what happened very simply was in 1 year we had 3 grandbabies, a blessing of Logan, Lily, and Lawson. And all 3 of them are at home now at my house for a sleepover. And this will be the first time in their almost 8 years for the twins, Lily and Logan, and for Lawson, their younger brother, who came 11 months later, the first time that I will miss having the bedtime story and singing a couple of songs to my lovely babies. But here I am on Big Al's Community Chat, and I'm going to be Papa Al for just a few minutes, so please bear with me. Lily, Logan, Lawson, I hope you're listening to Papa Al, and I'm not going to be able to tell you a bedtime story tonight, but Grammy Linda, who's there with you right now, she'll do that for you. But you know that I usually sing 2 songs to you before bedtime, and you know what they are, and I want you to sing them with me as we go along here, okay? So, first it's, "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my babies away." And of course, the second song, you know what it is, don't you? That's right. It's "Working on the Railroad." "I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away. Can't you hear the whistle blowing? Dinah, blow your horn. Can't you hear the whistle blowing? Dinah, blow your horn. Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn, your horn? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn? Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Someone's in the kitchen, I know. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah, strumming on the old banjo and singing fee-fi fiddly-i-o. Fee-fi fiddly-i-o, i-o, i. Fee-fi fiddly-i-o, strumming on the old banjo. Good night, my babies. Lily, Logan, Lawson, I love you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's Big Al again from Papa Al. And I'll tell you, it's really great to have your own radio show because you can do whatever you want on your radio show within limits. And this is the first time I've ever sort of diverted from Big Al to Papa Al. And hopefully it won't happen in the future. I'll be home with them every time that they stay over. So tonight we're going to have a call-in show. I'm hoping that I'll get all the calls and be able to answer any questions for you and see what we can do about that. And tonight we're going to do a little bit of sports and some politics. And I can tell you that there's been some really interesting things happening here locally with the Illini. And let's start off with somebody who I watched play baseball here not too long ago against Michigan. Well, I can only tell you it was one of the, as my wife called it, a very boring game. Because it was a 1-0 game, and the 2 pitchers pitching, Cody Sedlak and the Michigan pitcher, went complete innings, 9 innings, both of them, and we lost 1-0. And it turned out that that ball game lost us the opportunity to go to the Big Ten Championships. Sorry to say that this year we did not come up to hopefully expectations, and we missed it by one game. But something great happened just yesterday. Cody Sedlak is the Big Ten best pitcher. Despite the Illinois baseball team failing to live up to last year's successful run all the way to an NCAA Super Regional, the Illini can tout the Big Ten's best pitcher for the second year in a row. Cody Sedlak, a junior right-hander for Coach Dan Hartlett's program, takes home the honor on Tuesday, becomes the fifth pitcher in Illinois history to do so. Sedlak posted a 5-3 record with a 2.49 ERA in 101 in the third innings, establishing a single-season strikeout record with 116 compared to only 31 walks. You know, he was one of the four unanimous first-team All-Big Ten selections on Tuesday and was the only conference pitcher to finish in the top five of innings pitched. Strikeouts, ERA, and opponent's batting average, which was only 100.188 during the Big Ten games. That is really unbelievable, with an ERA of 1.67. That means less than two runs per nine-inning game. Sedlak joins former Illini Tyler Jay, who I watched last year do some incredible things, Drew Dickinson, Jason Anderson, and Brett Weber as the U of I pitchers to garner this distinction. Jay now with the Minnesota Twins organization, where he's 3-3 with a 2.79 ERA with the Class A advanced Fort Myers Miracle, won the award last season. Dickinson, now the Illini's pitching coach, earned the honors in 2001, while Anderson, a former standout at Danville, who is now the baseball coach at Eastern Illinois, claimed the accolade in 2000. 2 years after Weber became the first Illini pitcher to do so in 1998, Sedlak's a native of Sherrod, who plays high school basketball at Rock Island. Allerman has one of the years of eligibility left, but is expected to forego next season after he's likely finds himself a high selection in the upcoming MLB draft, which starts on June 9th. Along with Sedlak and three other Illini, received Big Ten accolades on Tuesday, and we're losing some heck of a ball players. The seniors that are going, catcher Jason Goldstein, who had, at this point, around a 312 average, but at one point in the season, he was at 340, 350. Team-high 29 run batters in, earned third-team All-American honors, and the third consecutive season, the senior from Highland Park collected league recognition. So I can only tell you that it was a disappointing season for Dan Hartlett, but, boy, I'll tell you, he always finds some extraordinary people, and I'm hoping the loss of these two next season can be replaced. Let's move on. If you would like to discuss anything that's going on, like this next issue, 6 days after pleading guilty to a single count of misdemeanor battery, Kendrick Nunn was dismissed from the Illinois men's basketball team. Now, before I go on and talk about the issue itself, my son Jeff, who is a U of I alumni and was one of the founders of the Orange Crush back many, many years ago, he called me up and he said, you know, it's funny that if one of the team players points a knife at somebody and doesn't stab him, he can get back on the team. But Kendrick Nunn got dismissed. So he was wondering if that didn't seem, let's say, fair. The key is, obviously, that domestic battery cannot be tolerated, and he did plead guilty. The Illini guard was arrested following a March 16 incident and charged with two counts of misdemeanor domestic battery following an incident where he allegedly to have hit a woman in the head, pushed her to the floor, and poured water on her, which, I don't know, maybe he wasn't thinking right or wasn't completely sober or for whatever reason. We have not yet reached this decision easily. We care deeply about Kendrick and want him to be successful. A joint statement from Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman and men's basketball coach John Gross read, but after extensive deliberation, we think it best for our program to reaffirm our core values of trust and respect to send a strong message about what is acceptable behavior for our student-athletes at the University of Illinois and to part ways with Kendrick. Whitman said in an earlier interview with the News Gazette that there's no place in our athletic program for domestic violence. It is an intolerable offense. As it is on college campuses across the country, relationship violence is of significant concern at our university. We expect Fighting Illini student athletes to be leaders in promoting healthy, respectful, caring relationships. The statement from Whitman and Gross continued, "We wish Kendrick all the best as he prepares for the next chapter of his life." Nunn's plea agreement saw him sentenced to 18 months of court supervision, ordered to perform 100 hours of public service, enroll in a partner abuse intervention program, and write a letter of apology to his victim. He was also fined $200. Should Nunn successfully complete these terms, no conviction will be entered on his record, so he'll be clean. The key is, what do you think? Do you think that Kendrick Nunn should have been dismissed from the team while a black was retained? What do you think of our basketball team and the problems we have incurred over the last 6 or 8 months? I think at least 4 of the basketball players were charged with some kind of crime. So it's been a real roller coaster for John Gross. And we'll probably see a half-decent team next year. We got Thorpe getting back his eligibility. Tracy Abrams most likely will also get his eligibility. He's been out. It's been a shame for Tracy. 2 years on the bench like that with injuries that continue to keep him on the bench. And hopefully he can come back and hopefully be a shadow of what he was. He was a dynamite point guard, and we sure could have used him over the last couple of years. I'm looking forward to him coming back. We just hope that Kendrick Nunn learns a lesson from this and turns his life around and then causes no more problems. I'm assuming he will be picked up by another team somewhere in another conference. I'm assuming not the Big Ten. And this is an uplifting story. Dee Brown. Who doesn't love Dee Brown? Let me tell you. I was there for those years when Dee Brown and Nick Anderson, we just had the most incredible run during that time. It was Dee Brown who sort of made the brand for the U of I basketball team. He was the most energetic, the most charismatic of anyone I can remember on our basketball team, and I think my wife wanted to adopt him about the first time she saw him play back in the day. He's back with Illinois basketball, which he should have been a long time ago. This never should have been a question in anyone's mind once he finished pro ball in Europe that he should have come back and been on the basketball coaching staff a long time ago. He brings tremendous credibility. I've met him a couple of times here recently. He's just a nice, extraordinary young man and brings a lot of integrity to our basketball program. So he's back with Illinois, one of the most popular players in program history, was named Director of Player Development and Alumni Relations on Wednesday morning. Ask our beat writer, Scott Ritchie. He's chatting at 12:30 p.m. with him, which we missed. Sorry to say. Brown has spent the past year working in the athletic department at Illinois as a special assistant to the athletic director, first under Mike Thomas and then under Josh Whitman. The 31-year-old, who Illinois hired last June, is the third leading scorer in program history at Illinois with 1,812 points and is the all-time winningest player in program history, playing in 114 wins during the career that lasted from 2002 to 2006. Wow, what a career. Brown's new duties with John Gross' program will include scheduling and coordinating all student athletic life skills, enhancements, opportunities, and community service participation. Other responsibility will be to provide off-the-court guidance to players during their college careers and beyond, coordinate video materials, contribute to on-campus recruiting-related activities, and directing correspondence with high school coaches and representing the program at various public and alumni events. Gross said Brown's position for Illinois is unmatched. He stands as one of the greatest to ever play here, but anyone who knows D knows that he does not rest upon his past accomplishment, Gross said in a statement. He is committed to paying it forward as a mentor to our current student-athletes. He has a tremendous future in coaching profession. We are thrilled to welcome him to our staff as we work collectively in a building a championship program. Well, I certainly hope it's a championship program. Illinois finished 15-19 last season. Sure wasn't a good season as usual. Its first losing season in 8 years and failed to make the NCAA tournament for the third straight season. I am thinking that with all these players back and incoming freshman who might be a point guard or two, this might be the deciding factor on John Gross's future. I mean, I don't think we've ever missed the NCAA, long before Lou Henson, a fourth straight time. We'll have to see. Brown is the News Gazette All-State Player of the Year in 2002 out of Proviso East. He played in the NCAA tournament all 4 years of his Illini career, including the 2005 run to the national championship where Illinois lost to North Carolina. And I'm still waiting for the NCAA to drop the hammer. Where are you, NCAA? This is a team that was caught cheating for 20 years, faking classes, faking programs, faking grades to keep players eligible. And at least two of the players on this team playing against us in 2005 should have been ineligible to play. And I can only say that it's unfair that the NCAA is sitting on its collective butt and not doing anything about this. How can even North Carolina have played in the NCAA this past season after what they have done to this game and its integrity? I can only say, where are you, NCAA? It's time to say what's going down with North Carolina, and I'm looking for the death penalty for at least a year. I don't think that you can make up just suspensions and probation and a few lost players to offset what they have done in 20 years. It's an absolute travesty, and we need to do something about it. So, Brown, the News Gazette's All-State Player in 2002, is so excited to begin the next chapter in his career, Brown said in a statement. I thought my love for this university couldn't exceed what it was when I played here, but my experience over the last year has only strengthened it. I believe in the vision that Coach Gross has for our program, and my role will help our players become the best they can be on the basketball court in all facets of life. He's just a super young man, and I'm proud to know him and proud to have seen him play. I'm sure all of you, certainly, who have ever watched him play, can tell you as I can remember Dick Vitale saying, he was a one-man fast break. When he went down the court, it was like blur. It was like a blur. You could hardly see him move. His movements were so quick and so fast. And then when he stopped short at the three-point line and just went net, it was just exciting to watch him play. And that game against where we came back from 14 down in 4 minutes to tie it, and then in overtime win it to go to the championship game. It was just an extraordinary match, against Arizona. That's who it was. Lute Olson at the time was the head coach, I remember correctly. And it was sort of weird. I was watching the game. It came to the end of regulation when we had come back in 4 minutes. Nobody had ever believed that could have happened. Everybody was thinking this game is over and we're certainly done for the year. And when it came back, I wondered his reaction. I don't know if anybody noticed that. If you ever go back on YouTube and go back to see that reaction as his team was coming off the court, he was all smiles. It was just a weird reaction. You would think he'd be more serious about it, that the team sort of fell apart and choked at the end of the game. But I kept saying to myself, there's something not right there with Lute Olson. And not too long later, he was gone. I think there was he was starting to, age as we all do. And sometimes being a head coach, you need to have you got to be on the ball all the time. So let's move on. If anybody wants to call in about any of our sports or anything else that's on your mind, please don't hesitate to give me a call tonight. Our phone number is 359-5483. 359-5483 here in Champaign. And we are on WEFT, 90.1 FM on your radio dial in Champaign, Illinois. And we stream live at weft.org. You know, here's another sport that my wife and I go to regularly, softball. We sort of go to everything. We've been part of the U of I since our son graduated and long before, or when I owned our business as the first sponsor of women's sports in the history of the University of Illinois, at women's sports. We owned the Blimpie Subs and Salads franchise back in the 80s and 90s, and right after Title IX, our store, first store, was on 4th and Green, and we wanted to be part of the U of I, and because we were on campus, and we felt it was important to build relationships and association with the U of I, and we did so. And so we have been sports fans for 37 years here in Champaign, and we go to everything, whether it be football or basketball, softball or baseball, volleyball, you name it, we go to it, soccer as well. But this year I was really, really surprised. We had not made the NCAA in softball for a number of years now, and a new coach came on the scene this past year, and her name is Nicole Evans. The point was, we weren't sure, you know, how this young lady would be able to take this team, and with what she hadn't obviously done any recruiting yet, and because pitching is so vital in softball, we wondered how the season would turn out. Well, boy, we were surprised, in a good way, of course. Nicole Evans might have subconsciously uttered the words without realizing it in the moments after Illinois softball season ending lost to Kentucky on Saturday night in the NCAA tournament. When we host next year, the Illini junior said, it's not going to be tough enough just to be there. A lofty goal indeed for a program that has never hosted an NCAA tournament game at Eckelberger Field since the Illini's first season in 2000. But coming off a season which few outside the program expected Illinois to find itself among the 64 teams, Evans made it clear the players expect the 2017 season to bear even more progress. It opens up a lot of our future teams, and our seniors have done so much to build that, Evans said. We know we can go further in the future. I keep remembering us in our locker room yelling and cheering that we were so happy to be here. We're here to win. We're here to make a statement in the Big Ten and the NCAA. Illinois was one of the six Big Ten teams selected for the NCAA tournament, but only Michigan will play in the Super Regionals next weekend with a berth in the Women's College World Series still possible. I felt completely blessed to play this postseason, Illini coach Tyra Perry said, that our goal from the beginning, but you know every team has a goal and you don't always get that chance. I thought we played great softball, we understood our mission and our goal, and I love every single one of the players I've coached. Those are the players who were unfamiliar to her a year ago as she considered the Illini job after two seasons at Ball State. She led the Cardinals to the NCAA tournament in 2015 and did so in her first year with the Illini after replacing Terry Sullivan, the only coach Illinois had ever known. Now, we knew Terry Sullivan. We sat in on the first season all the way up to this season from the day softball started here in Champaign. It was definitely a whirlwind, especially for us seniors who had been with the same coaching staff for 3 years, said Kylie Johnson, one of the five seniors this season for the Illini. Once we found out Coach Sullivan was not returning, it was the process of who was going to be the new coach. The transition was as smooth as it could have been. Talent is returning for Illinois, so is pride after becoming only the second Illinois women's athletic program to reach an NCAA tournament this year. With volleyball, the other, Kevin Hamblish's team advanced to the Sweet 16 last fall. The returners that we have coming back, the mindset and the mentality is so exciting to me, Perry said. I really wish we could get out there again immediately, but I talked to them at the end after making sure they understand this moment, when it took to get here, and then also pause to think about what it's going to take to get even further. Well, I'm really looking forward to next season. Softball is a fun game. It's free, as is baseball, for you to come over and take a look. Soccer is also free, so it's something that you can do on a beautiful afternoon, and we've had a few. This last weekend playing Michigan was just absolutely fantastic. We won 2 out of 3, and if Maryland had lost, we would have been in the Big Ten championship, but we lost. Maryland won, and we lost that first game Friday night with Sedlak pitching just an unbelievable game. One mistake, one pitch to a hitter on Michigan who had not hit a home run the whole season and was batting 192 at the time. It was just the pitch he got a hold of and put it out, and that was the final score, 1-0. So we're looking forward to seeing baseball on an uptick, and softball as well coming up. Now, we have another great team in sports. I'll tell you, a lot of our non-revenue, as we call them, have done phenomenal for us. When we go to gymnastics, and we go to gymnastics, we go to wrestling. Wrestling is a top-quality program in the United States, as is the Big Ten, which I would think is the strongest conference in the country. These teams, just like volleyball, which is now the strongest conference here, the Big Ten as well, just about, I think, out of the 14 teams that play volleyball, I think eight or nine are in the top 20 or top 25. That is an extraordinary accomplishment, considering the fact back when in 1981, when Mike Hebert came in, we were 5-25. And Mike said to me, I don't know how we won the five games. It was that poor. We played over in Kenny Gym. Does anybody remember Kenny Gym? That beat up old place off of Springfield? We had to clean it up. It was a mess to play in. And there were many a day when we were pulling out and taking out trash and old beat up chairs and tables and things just to get the team on the court. And of course, now we play in a Huff Hall, and they're going to remodel the seats now, and they've remodeled the court. And now we have a traditional top 10 team with Kevin Hambly. I'm looking forward to another great season. But here's another one of our great coaches, Mike Small. I'll tell you, the trophy case at the Dermijane Golf Practice Facility is stuffed. But Mike Small will find room for the big prize if the Illini bring it back from Oregon next week. Right now, Illinois has second and third place NCAA trophies and a bunch from the Big Ten. And we did win the Big Ten championship again this year. Mike Small is incredible. I don't think he has to go out and recruit. I think they line up waiting to play for him. Just name it. He says, I want you, and he comes. Because I'll tell you, Mike Small is one of the great, great coaches in the not only the Big Ten, but across the country. To win the final one, that's been our goal every year. The Illini golf coach said, as the team prepared to leave Monday for the NCAA finals, we haven't won it yet. There's a lot of great players and a lot of great teams, and it's hard. Small grew up in the area. He played college golf at Illinois and came back as coach. Would it mean more to him to win a title here? I think winning is winning, Small said. It would mean more to me because of the time we put in. Small preaches about winning for players. He believes it. You do it for the kids, Small said. It's not about the coaches. I think college athletics has tinted way towards the coaches' side the last 15, 25, 30 years. The administrations have grown, and the NCAA has grown, which has become a big business. But if you're really dumbing it down, it's all about the kids. I'll be more happy for the kids and what they have the rest of our lives to carry that title around. As a player at Illinois, Small was part of a breakthrough group that ended a long Big Ten title drought in 1988. That was a big deal to get us back then. We carried a lot of pride for many years to come. For the kids to win a national championship and to be able to be proud of that and be able to talk to their kids about their friends and family 15 years down the road, boy, wouldn't that really be neat. Illinois' golf power once seemed like a ridiculous idea. A northern school couldn't possibly reach the NCAA championships year after year, but Small, his players, and his staff have made it happen. The results look routine, Small said, but winning is not a routine anywhere. It is so competitive. We have been lucky to dodge the average year for almost a decade. Illinois has advanced to the NCAA finals 9 years in a row, the third longest current streak. Wow, that is just extraordinary. Am I naive to think they will never come? No, they're going to have some rough years in there. It's human nature, Small said. Everybody has a cyclical stuff. I just want, when those cycles hit, that they be short-lived. That's my goal. Small was hired by former U of I aide, AD Ron Gunther. The program continued to win with Mike Thomas in charge. Now Josh Whitman is running the Illinois Athletics. Small hasn't had much quality time with Whitman because of their schedules. I'm sure we'll sit down and go over the future and plan out the next 5 to 10 years of Illinois golf. When he's ready, I'll be ready. There's no immediate needs for the program. The indoor facility and practice range are state-of-the-art. We had the support of the administration for the better part of 15 years, giving us the freedom to do things small. We've got what we need right now, the rest of the department. There's some issues that need to be addressed with other teams and other facilities. We're fine. Well, I can only say good luck, Mike Small, and good luck to the team. I know you guys are going to do well. You came from behind at the Big Ten Championships and won it. I'm looking forward to a national championship coming home to Champaign. Now, we can go into a little bit more sports, but let's change the tempo here for a minute, okay? This is an interesting article that I picked up by a gentleman named Scott Reeder. This you got to listen to, folks. Take a listen to what our legislators are doing during work hours, okay? A Champaign TV station has folks here stood up because it caught two lawmakers playing video games on their phones while an important budget bill was being debated in the House. Budget bill? What budget? Meanwhile, the two lawmakers caught on tape, Kate Cloonan and Mike Smitty, were quite chagrined. Well, I would think so. I couldn't help but roll my eyes. What they did is commonplace in the Illinois House. They were just unlucky enough to do it when someone was paying attention. In fact, it's so common for lawmakers to loaf during debates that reporters who routinely cover the General Assembly have ceased reporting it. But it makes it no less pathetic. I began covering the General Assembly in 1988. Since then, I've seen lawmakers stumbling drunk on the floor. I've seen others sleep and others hungover. Newspapers and magazines are read and speeches ignored. A former senator from Western Illinois loved to buy artwork on eBay.com during debates. And two Republican budget experts likely to pay risk on their taxpayers' own computers while legislation was pondered. Is it funny because it's true? Is it funny because it's pathetic? And it's funny because it's just ridiculous. But most lawmakers mill around and chat with colleagues while speeches are being delivered. I remember the first time I saw the Illinois House in action. I was a graduate student taken here by a professor, Bill Miller, who himself was a veteran State House reporter. After observing a day of debate, Miller asked my classmates and me our impression of the Illinois House of Representatives. Our class responded in unison, "Chaos!" Miller laughed and said, "That's what everybody says." For a long time, that's how I thought all state legislators behaved. Then I spent 3 months covering the Nevada legislature. Even though lawmakers receive less than one-tenth the pay of their counterparts in Illinois, they manage to be quiet and respectful during speeches, avoid throwing food, and are generally considerate of their colleagues. It would seem a pretty low bar for Illinois lawmakers to reach. But I've seen popcorn fights, a box of Kleenex thrown at the Speaker of the House, shoes being shined, and a whole host of activities no other workplace would tolerate. In fact, I found it rather ironic when a lawmaker known for his in-session temper tantrums bemoaned the breach of decorum when other representative extended his middle finger to the chamber. These guys, they're just too much. While both Smitty and Clooney are Democrats, the behavior is bipartisan. Hey, well, you got something going, bipartisan. In fact, to the casual observer, it would appear to be a parliament of goofballs. But that's not quite fair. There are many lawmakers who care, they want to serve, but are trapped in a system that offers not a shred of solemnity to the process. Well, you wonder why there's no budget for a year, and now who knows if there's going to be a budget this year. It's getting crazy. I mean, I don't know. Has any state gone 2 years without a budget? Is that possible? I don't know. It's just unbelievable. So here's another issue that will affect all of us in our pocketbook coming up in Springfield. On the same day that thousands of people came to the Capitol to rally for Exelon Corporation's Next Generation Energy Plan, Attorney General Lisa Madigan issued another statement opposed to the legislation she called a bailout. Madigan's top assistant in her public interest division, Kara Hendrickson, last week testified against the legislation, which has been promoted by Exelon and its subsidiary, Commonwealth Edison, in a Senate committee hearing. And on Tuesday, the Attorney General herself issued a statement about the bill, Senate Bill 1585, that is scheduled for another committee hearing Wednesday morning. It's outrageous that Exelon and ComEd are again requesting a bailout when they're both profitable companies. This proposal would force consumers to pay more, only to boost a company's profits further, said Madigan, a Democrat. The legislature has more important matters to address than padding ComEd and Exelon's profits. Madigan's statement was released hours after a noon rally at the Capitol, where the headliners included sponsor Senator Donnie Trotter and also Chicago Democrat and Michael Carrigan, the president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Among those at the rally were hundreds of Exelon employees, including some from the Clinton nuclear plant in DeWitt County. They chanted, "Save our plants," during the event. The Clinton plant and other nuclear stations in Quad Cities face a shutdown if the legislature doesn't pass a bill providing aid to Exelon by May 31st. The utility has warned. Here we go. Blackmail once again. This is a comprehensive bill that would reduce household energy bills, save and create thousands of jobs, power the state's economy, and enhance the reliability and security of our electric grid. It's important that these legislators hear your voice today, tomorrow, and in the weeks to come, said Carrigan. You're fighting for your jobs, you're fighting for your families, you're fighting for your community. This is a good bill. Meanwhile, Trotter said Tuesday that negotiations continue on legislation, mostly among businesses, environmental, consumer, and energy groups. There's another meeting today of other parties, but I'm not involved, he said. It is daily, and I know that the various teams are going through that bill. There is some movement going on. Trotter said that the Ameren Illinois, which serves much of downstate Illinois, has submitted an amendment to the bill that will be heard at the Senate Energy Committee Wednesday. Also downplayed the May 31st deadline. We don't have to act by May 31st, but we're talking about it, delivering energy in the state of Illinois, he said. But we have to look at how we do this as fast as possible. Well, I don't know. What do you think? You think that we should bail out Exelon? And what do you think? They don't make enough money? Do we pay enough high electric bills and gas bills? What do you think? Well, I hope we don't. Well, here's an interesting story in Springfield, but it's right here locally in Monticello. Gabby's Law. I know if you've heard about it, it goes to the governor's desk. Gabby's Law, the legislation named for a 5-year-old Monticello girl who died from sepsis 4 years ago, is on the way to Governor Bruce Rauner's desk. This was a tragedy. The Illinois House voted 115-0 for House Bill 2403, which will require Illinois hospitals to adopt, implement, and periodically update protocols for early recognition and treatment of patients with sepsis or septic shock. Sepsis, according to the Centers for Disease Control, is the body's overwhelming and life-threatening response to infection, which can lead to tissue damage, organ failure, and death. It is difficult to predict, diagnose, and treat. In Gabriella Galbo's case, she passed away after a tick bite when undetected and eventually developed into sepsis. Her parents, Tony and Liz Galbo of Monticello, were in the House gallery Tuesday when the legislation was approved without debate. They received a standing ovation from the House members after the vote. Governor Rauner already has indicated he will sign the bill, and the Galbos and House sponsor, Representative Bill Mitchell of Forsyth. He already told us on the 21st of April when Senate voted on it that he was behind it and Tony Galbo. Rauner's spokesman, Catherine Kelly, said only that the bill is under review. You can never be certain, Mitchell said, but I'll talk to the governor's office when he signs it. The Galbo family, both sides, would like to come over here for that. Liz Galbo called Tuesday's vote bittersweet. Tony Galbo said he and his wife now want to work to pass a parents' bill of rights in Illinois. The sepsis bill is very important for what happened to Gabby and other people, but a lot of things weren't taken care of in her situation, so the parents' bill of rights is important, too. They said they'd expect to be back in Springfield next year to work on that legislation in 4 legislative steps this spring. If you'd like to take a look at it, it's Senate Bill 2403. Never received a no vote. Well, congratulations to the family. I know it's bittersweet and you never get back a child, but hopefully in the future it will save the lives of others. And that's what's most important. We wish you both the best. And I know time will help heal some, but you can never, never get over losing a child. I can only tell you that from experience. So as we move on, I know you've been listening to this, and I know that you still wonder in your mind how this possibly happened and how we never knew about it until just recently. I mean, fairly recently. She called him Mr. Cosby and considered him a trusted friend and mentor. But 20 minutes after Bill Cosby offered her three blue pills and told her to take them with the wine he had set out, Andrea Constantine's legs began to wobble like jelly, her eyes went blurry, and her head began to throb. Cosby helped her to the couch in his living room where she later realized he violated her as she lay helplessly in a stupor. She told police in 2005. On Tuesday, a judge ordered the 78-year-old Cosby to stand trial on sexual assault charges on the strength of Constance's decade-old police statement, sparing the former Temple University employee the need to testify at the preliminary hearing. Cosby could get 10 years in prison if convicted. Now, I was listening to some defense attorneys and prosecutors. I don't know if it was CNN or some radio show, but they don't think he's going to be able to get anywhere near the 10 years. He's never been convicted of a crime, even though there are 40 or 50 other women out there who have also claimed the same problem. On Tuesday, a judge ordered the 78-year-old Cosby to stand trial on sexual assault charges on the strength of her old statement. Cosby could get 10 years. The only criminal charges brought against a comedian out of a barrage of allegations that he drugged and molested dozens of women over 5 decades. He is free on $1 million bail. A trial date was not immediately set. Cosby, looking less frail than he did when he arrested 5 months ago, seemed unfazed by District Judge Elizabeth McHugh's decision. Mr. Cosby is not guilty of any crime, and not one single fact represented by the Commonwealth rebuts this truth, his lawyer said in a statement afterwards. Maybe they should check with the 50 or 60 other women who have come out and told the similar same story over and over and over again. The hearing was not the face-to-face confrontation between accuser and accused that some had anticipated. Constant, who is now a massage therapist in Toronto, was not in the courtroom, and the judge ruled that she did not have to testify at this stage. Instead, prosecutors had portions of her 2005 police statement read into the record. While authorities in recent months have paraphrased her account and quoted fragments, this was apparently the first time that large sections of her statement, or Cosby's for that matter, were made public. Constant told police that the comedian penetrated her with his fingers and fondled her at a suburban Philadelphia mansion in 2004 after giving her what she said was a herbal medication. After taking pills, she said everything went blurry and dizzy. I told him I can't even talk. Mr. Cosby, I started to panic, she told police. She said she awoke with her bra askew and did not remember undoing it. Cosby's lawyers argued unsuccessfully that having a police officer read Constance's statement instead of putting her on the stand would be a third-hand testimony and would deprive him right to confront his accuser. But reading a police statement into the record is common practice at a preliminary hearing in Pennsylvania. The defense also argued that Constant was having a relationship with a married man and that they had engaged in petting during her 2 or 3 earlier visits to his home. Here we go again. Make her the victim. In his own 2005 statement to police, experts of which were also read in the court, Corby said Constance never said no as he put his hand down her pants. He told police the pills were over-the-counter Benadryl that he takes to help him sleep. Yeah, right. Cosby's attorney, Brian McGonigal, also questioned why Constance continued to see the comedian and even returned to the house to meet with him after the alleged assault. In addition, the defense seized on discrepancy in the three police statements Constance gave, including her shifting memory of precisely when the encounter occurred. Cosby settled with Constantine for an undisclosed sum in 2006 after testifying behind closed doors about his extramarital affairs, his use of quaaludes to seduce women, and his efforts to hide payments to former lovers from his wife. But prosecutors reopened the criminal case last year after dozens of women leveled similar allegations and after Cosby's sealed testimony in the Constant lawsuit was made public. Cosby's lawyers are trying to get the case thrown out, arguing that a previous prosecutor made a binding promise a decade ago that the comic would never be charged. He's also fighting defamation lawsuits across the country for alleged branding his accusers liars, and is trying to get his homeowner's insurance to pay his legal bills. Okay. Pretty much unbelievable. Mr. Cosby. Wow. Wasn't he the upstanding man who told parents what to do about their kids? You know, how they weren't doing a good job? Well, I don't know. All the while, you know, it's just all the while he's a predator, a perverted predator. just unbelievable. Well, we had another shooting in North Champaign, and one died, second is injured. One man is dead and a second injured in a shooting in North Champaign this past weekend. Champaign police said there were several shots fired around 2:18 a.m. in the 1,000 block of North James. Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup identified the man killed as Statesman T. Hoff, 22. Just another young man, another one killed. Police said he had already been taken to Carl Hospital by the time officers arrived. Mr. Hoff was pronounced dead there. At the scene, it was another 23-year-old man who had what police described as a non-life-threatening injury. Lieutenant Dave Schaefer said that man was admitted to Carl with at least one gunshot wound to his upper torso. We know there was a party there and a fight broke out outdoors. We don't believe the men shot were firing at each other. There is still a lot to put together at the scene, Schaefer said. At daylight, police began collecting physical evidence in hopes of figuring out where the shots came from, what kind of weapon may be involved. Schaefer said they still have many people to interview. He said detectives have received conflicting information on how many people were present when the shooting started. Northrup said an autopsy on Mr. Hoff has been scheduled for Monday. And if you have any information, call the department or remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers. First, the department number is 351-4545. Or if you have and want to remain anonymous, Crime Stoppers are at 373-8477. 373-8477. And we're on WEF. This is Big Al's Community Chat at 90.1 FM in Champaign and streaming live at WEFT.org. I hope you're listening, and I hope that the information I give to you tonight is, well, something you hadn't heard before, but perhaps something you'd like to make a comment on. And I'm looking forward to any calls if necessary. Let's see where we go from here. Well, we had a fire this weekend. Boy, what a fire that was, wasn't it? I don't know if you saw the pictures. I thought it was that forest fire up in Canada, the way that fire was just blown out. You know, company officials from Worko Incorporated were conferring with firefighters early Saturday in the aftermath of a blaze that destroyed a portion of the alloy engineering and casting foundry in West Champaign last Friday. As soon as they let us, we'll get in there and make an assessment to see what's going to take to get back on our feet, said Timothy T.J. Wright, a co-owner of the Indiana-based business that had owned alloys since 2005. As soon as they let us, we'll get in here and make an assessment. Champaign firefighters were called at 8:48 p.m. Friday to a business at 1700 West Washington, which make casting designs to withhold heat for a variety of industries. There was a large fire inside the west end of the plant nearest Madison Avenue, where materials used in production of casting were stored. None of the 92 employees were working at that hour, according to the plant manager. You know, I've lived in this town 37 years. I knew that craft was out there, but I had not known that this was part of an individual's ownership of a foundry that was there and that it had 92 employees. The initial crews were able to get inside the building to make an interior attack but couldn't get to the scene of the fire, said Champaign Deputy Fire Chief Dave Ferber. It was a very large area on fire and they just couldn't get it out. It just kept getting bigger all the time. As the fire grew, breaking through the roof, crews were pulled out to fight the blaze defensively. Champaign firefighters sounded second and third alarms, which I haven't seen in a long time in Champaign. A second and third alarm in Champaign is just very unusual. And they were getting help from Urbana and Savoy. Ferber estimated there were more than 50 firefighters helping subdue the inferno, which could be seen for miles. They said the fire was out about 2:15 a.m. At the height of the fire, they were pumping as many as 6,000 gallons of water a minute on it. At one point, there were about 5 inches of standing water in the parking lot and drive on the south side of the plant. Fire, Ferber said, change on you so quickly. Firefighters used a high hoe to help knock down walls on the plant's north side in an effort to get the fire out more quickly. He guessed the area where the fire was concentrated was about 100 feet wide and 50 feet deep. Because of the magnitude of destruction, the state fire marshal was called to assist in the investigation. And given the amount of damage, it could take a while for the local state and fire investigators to pinpoint the origin and the cause. Baldus, who had been the plant manager for 6 years, said the company normally runs 4 10-hour shifts Monday through Thursday and does preventative maintenance on Fridays. The last employees there on Friday left at 3 p.m., he said. The east end of the building where the castings are finished and cleaned up for shipping was virtually unscathed. Baldus of Ahamet was coaching his teenage son baseball game in Latham when he was notified of the fire around 9 p.m. 98% of the time I don't answer the phone if someone I don't know, for whatever reason I answered, Baldus said, of the call that came from the fire officials needing answers on how to gain access. The whole drive here, I just put my phone in the glove box because it was going crazy. People getting anxious and didn't stay calm and bad things happen. I get on I-72 and set the cruise control, he said. After dropping his son and son's friend off in Mahomet, Baldus headed for his workplace. He could see the smoke from Illinois 47, 7 miles west of the foundry. On a sunny Saturday morning, Baldus conferred with company officials milling about in the debris on how to proceed. T.J. Wright lives in Florida but was visiting his sons in Indianapolis when he got the word of the fire. That was, let me tell you, that was an unbelievable fire. Wright, a pilot who flew himself, nephew, and company president Chad Wright and his son Aaron Wright to Champaign in his own airplane to see what was left. They joined by general manager Joe Wells. The Wrights are the co-owners of Worko Incorporated, which has been in operation since 1969 and is headquartered in Avila, Indiana. Worko has owned Alloy since 2005. The company makes castings for the automotive, aerospace, petrochemical, and food industries that are designed to endure high temperatures and resist corrosion. Baldus said the last fire of any significant magnitude at the Illinois foundry happened in 1951. He said there was nothing in the area that burned that was chemical in nature. The production materials that were consumed were made of wood and plastic, and according to Ferber, would create quite a stink. T.J. Wright noted wryly that the company officials had made substantial investment about a year ago in a fire suppression system for the building. Well, they're going to have to check on that one. It's just a hiccup, but we'll get through it, says Baldus, calling it a blessing that no one was hurt in the fire. That's true. T.J. Wright echoed that he thanked the Champaign Fire Department for its massive effort. Neighbor Kevin Cash, who lives on West Washington, just near the plant, said he and his family diverted to his mother-in-law's Friday to spend the night when they learned of the fire. Cash said he was on his way home from work and his wife called and told him about it. It's a devastating fire, horrific. I feel so bad for the employees and their management. Well, so do I, and hopefully so do you. There's 92 jobs there, and that's important for Champaign at all times, and certainly is important, certainly, for those people working there. All right. Now, where do we go from here? I was going to talk about this transgender issue, but, you know, I've decided that I'm not going to get into that fight. Already the U of I have genderless, if you want to call it, bathrooms, and I'm not going to get into that fight. To me, that's just not something I want to discuss at this point. Champaign police arrested 5 men in the late morning raid Tuesday. That's last night, including one wanted in a weekend shooting in North Champaign that left one man dead and a second injured. Lieutenant Dave Schaefer said about a dozen Champaign police detectives and U.S. Marshals approached a house in the 600 block of West Beardsley around 11 a.m. after developing information that Shannon Campbell, 33, wanted in connection with a Sunday shooting on North James Street, and Javon Mays, 35, wanted for a March 30th shooting at Mattis North Apartments, might be at the house. Both were. They saw us. We had the house surrounded, but they still ran. Schaefer said the five who were captured within about 90 seconds. Besides Campbell and Mays, police also arrested Dontrell Wright and Showen Russell and Tyron Griffin, all of Champaign, for weapons violations. As the five were fleeing, we recovered several weapons in the flight path. We know of three. We charged the people that took that flight path with those weapons. Police went to a neighborhood heavily armed and wearing bulletproof vests, knowing that the men believed to be there are known to carry and use guns. When the chase began, police notified Unit 4 officials who locked down the five school buildings in the area. More patrol officers joined in, Schaefer said. We had such a large footprint with law enforcement, we were able to split and get on everybody really quickly. Nobody got out of our sight. Schaefer said police had a warrant for Campbell, charging him with aggravated battery with a firearm for allegedly shooting Dustin Fonville, 23, in the torso about 2:15 a.m. Sunday outside a home on 1,000 block of North James Street. What started as a party ended in Fonsville's wounding on the death of Stateman Hoff, 22, of Champaign. No charges have been filed against anyone for Mr. Hoff's death as an investigation is ongoing. Apparently, it was a college graduation party for a very nice lady. There was a group of individuals who showed up to stick up for one of the girls present. Some of the men who arrived got into a fight that escalated into shots being fired. At the end of the shots fired, when everyone is settled, they realize one guy, Fonville, is shot in the shoulder, then find Mr. Hoff shot as well. Schaefer said that the deceased Mr. Hoff had a gun in his hand that police recovered. An autopsy showed that he died of a single gunshot wound to the abdomen. Police said Fonville was taken to Carl Hospital. Officials had no further information about him Tuesday. The Tuesday morning arrest on Beardsley led to a lockdown of the early childhood school, Stratton Elementary School, Novak Academy, and the Family Information Center at Columbia School and Franklin Middle School as well. For about 10 minutes, students were required to stay in their classrooms, and no one could enter or leave the school that time. Mays has been wanted on a Champaign County arrest warrant issued April 1st in connection with the March 30th shooting of Jeremy Robinson, 32, who lived in the 2000 block of Cynthia Drive. Champaign Robinson was arrested 2 days after he was shot, also for weapons violations. Assistant State's Attorney Lindsey Clark said the incident involving Mays and Robinson about 5 p.m. on that Wednesday in the parking lot of the Mattis North Apartments. There were several people present, including someone who was recording the incident, which was later posted on Facebook. In the video, Robinson can be seen trying to intervene between the women while holding what appeared to be a handgun. She said two different series of shots were fired. From what we can tell, Robinson pulled the gun first and shots are fired. He ends up getting shot several times in the leg and groin and runs into the apartment of his current girlfriend. Police later learned that the shots that hit Robinson came from a 9mm handgun that Mays allegedly fired. Boy, this is getting complicated. Robinson's, police learned, had a .45 caliber handgun. It was found inside the apartment where he had retreated after being shot. Both 9mm and .45 caliber casings were found in the parking lot, Clout said. After Robinson was released from the hospital on April 1, he was arrested on charges of unlawful use of a weapon by a felon and aggravated discharge of a firearm. Mays was charged with being an armed habitual criminal, unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, and aggravated battery with a firearm. He has been at large since March 30th incident. Robinson, meantime, remains in the county jail in lieu of $500,000 bond, is due back in court June 14th. Both Mays and Campbell are being held in lieu of $750,000 in bond. Schaefer said Wright, Russell, and Griffin were all arrested for unlawful use of weapons. Formal charges are expected to be filed against them on Wednesday. Well, we're coming to the end of our show. It's 8:58, and you've been listening to Big Al's Community Chat. We have coming up, hopefully, Mara. I haven't seen her yet, and I hope she's coming in for this evening. And we will have some beautiful music coming up here in about 2 minutes. And I'm looking forward to seeing you on the second and fourth Wednesday nights of the month, and hopefully we'll have a different guest for us. We've had some great guests coming up in the future, and looking forward to Big Al's Community Chat coming up in 2 weeks. Have a great evening, folks.